Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Tyler, so a good main event. Solid match, I thought. I thought Varsity Blondes looked pretty good in there opposite the Young Bucks. But the real story, John Moxley, Eddie Kingston attack after the match. Tony Khan makes the tag team championship match for Double or Nothing final. John Moxley and Eddie Kingston against the Young Bucks. Let's just start there. Do you like this direction for the tag team division in AEW? What'd you think of the main event tonight and the closing angle?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think it was pretty, pretty obvious this is the direction they were going. They didn't want to give every match away last week. So, makes sense with the storyline of Moxley and Kingston winning their match and this match happening and all that. So it all works for me. You know, I don't think it's the most crucial match on the card. You know, it's probably fourth or fifth, which, shows that the card's pretty stacked. But, yeah, I think it works. I don't see Kingston and Moxley winning, just the bigger stories with the Elite and them having titles through this makes more sense. But for, a pretty quick build, I think it works. And, it'll be a moment for Moxley to have a big entrance with full fans. And, Kingston will probably eat the pin. But, yeah, it works. I mean, long term, it could be better. But I'm not quite sure what they do after this. But, I think with most things, AEW gets the benefit of the doubt with me to build to legitimate tag team opponents down the road. But, yeah, it works for me.
Yeah. I mean, I can note it on Twitter. I was going back and forth during the show. I mean, that the John Moxley entrance and a couple others, too, in front of that full, Double or Nothing crowd. Jericho comes to mind, but Moxley and that new music. I mean, that's going to be a thing that you're not going to want to miss, that entrance. I wonder if, you almost kick off the show with that, right? Like, that could just be a moment, man, for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm with you in terms of where they go next. Like, it's crazy to say, but like John Moxley and the Elite and Kenny Omega in particular have been so, intertwined for so long, and every match, they've had the lights out match, the exploding barbed wire death match. I mean, they've done it all, but it still seems like there hasn't been this definitive end to that feud, whether it's with the Bucks or whether it's with Kenny Omega. And I don't know that that's coming with this match either in a week.
Yeah, and that's, you have to say it's a problem, because I think overall, minus the ending of the barbed wire death match, I think it's been a pretty good story, and obviously there's a lot of star power, so all of that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I think it probably should be the end if you're asking me, if you gave me the book. But I would think that we're going to go a direction of whoever wins the Stadium Stampede match, if it's Santana, Ortiz or Jericho and Sammy, as a face team before Jericho leaves for his Fozzy tour. I think that makes sense for what they're trying to do. And, there's a lot more, baby face tag teams, going forward that can challenge the Bucks. So, that makes sense to me, where do Moxley and Kingston go from here? Because basically Moxley's lost every big match he's had in 2021, and he's going to be just as hot as ever. But at some point he's got to get a big win. Does he go against Miro and take that off him at some point? But I think Moxley's been booked pretty perfectly the entire time. So again, benefit of the doubt to AEW and Tony Khan on that one.
Yeah. So just to go down the rabbit hole there, because I think it's an interesting conversation to have. And the thing is, we can go in this direction, because I think the feud between the Young Bucks and John Moxley and Eddie Kingston has some heat behind it. I don't think it's this cold match, but I also think it's, at the same time, really A to B in nature in terms of how it's booked. I mean, like, I don't, you know, there is a little bit of a personal story here, a little bit of a personal grudge, but, you know, nothing that's like uber deep or anything like that. So it's kind of going to be what I'm expecting to be a really solid tag team match. I think it can open the show. I think it can be great in that regard, but I don't know that it's, you know, designed at this point to be anything more than that. Like, I don't get the sense that they're attempting to build this as a, you know, epic tag team encounter like they tried with FTR and the Young Bucks, or like they tried with Adam Page and Kenny Omega against the Young Bucks. This seems to be just, you know, almost like a, you know, I don't know, a fun little match. And I don't mean anything negative by that, but it just seems like a level below, you know, what we've seen from that tag team division in the last 5 months.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if this was if this match happened on a branded episode of Dynamite, you know, whatever million branded episodes we've had, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this match was built around one of those shows. And that's not to say that's bad, but yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the fourth or fifth most important match on the show so far, and you know, that's fine. I think AEW's been very heavy on the tag team division, and this might be one of the, you know, least important tag team matches in AEW pay-per-view history, but I think that's a good sign of growth for the company as well, that they don't need to lean on the Young Bucks to have the best match and have the most anticipated match every time. But, you know, I think that's a positive in general.
Yeah. So curveball here, question, maybe you're not ready to answer, but I mean, presuming the Young Bucks win this match, which I think all indications are they will, where do you go with them, and is there an opponent that's, you know, hot enough to face them and potentially take the titles off them at this point? Or are we in the era of AEW and the tag team division for that company that's just, you know, the Young Bucks have the belts and, you know, ride it till the wheels fall off?
Yeah, I probably lean more on the latter of those two options. You know, I do think whoever wins the Steve Stampede match, and you know, I would assume it's going to be Inner Circle, just to keep that feud going, that you know, that babyface tag team that they choose out of that group, you know, can be a big match later in the summer. So, but yeah, I mean, I think right now there's, I think even more than Omega, because Omega feels like there's really no one to take it off of him that works perfectly right now. I think it's even more dramatic with the Young Bucks right now, and that whatever team is going to take it off of them is going to be a team that's made, and that's how you want it, in my opinion. I mean, if I were booking a wrestling company, I would have title changes be pretty infrequent for the most part and make them feel special. You know, they kind of did that. The TNT title is the microwave version of that, right? With Darby having, you know, nine title defenses in 2 months, it seems. So, you know, I think that trajectory where you have a lot of title defenses and then you build someone just like they did is a pretty good way to go. And that team has not probably emerged yet in Tony Khan's mind, but, you know, I think it'll happen, and that'll be a big day when some team is elevated tremendously by being the Young Buck.
Yeah, yeah. And then same question in regards to John Moxley. You can take it as a John Moxley singles wrestler or John Moxley with Eddie Kingston. You know, there, I think there's probably some more options, you know, when looking at that. Anthony Ogogo stood out today as a guy who, you know, I think put with somebody the likes of John Moxley, maybe not, you know, next month or the following, but 6 months from now, after a little bit more seasoning, you know, he had a presence about him tonight that I think would gel nicely with John Moxley. I think they could go in that direction. But what about you? What's next for Moxley after, you know, taking, like, as you know, put correctly, that he hasn't won a lot in 2021. Where does he go from here, assuming he loses?
Yeah, it's tough because I really like him and Kingston as a team, but you don't want to keep them going and just kind of recycle this where they are tagging all the time, and then, you know, why are they not getting a title shot and all that. So I do think they have to separate a bit, at least with their in-ring stuff. They can still, you know, have each other's back and defend each other, have all those fun segments together. But, yeah, I do think he's got to move on. And, yeah, I mean, I like your suggestion of a go-go. I didn't really think of him, and I'm very excited to talk about that segment later in the show when we get to it. But I could see Moxley being kind of what Cody Rhodes was, at least what we envisioned him to be, kind of more in the beginning of AEW's run, where, I mean, I guess Cody's still doing it. He's got a match against a go-go. But, you know, Moxley is that guy that no matter what you do with him at this point, I think he's going to be, you know, a top two fan favorite, depending on what's happening in the company, and anyone you put up against him is going to get booed, and they're going to, you know, have a great match with the vet and get elevated as a result, win or lose. So I think kind of him being that elevated gatekeeper, I wish I had a better term than that, but, you know, putting guys over even through winning, I think is his role for the next 6 months. Unfortunately, my most anticipated match for Jon Moxley is not going to happen in AEW in the next 6 months, but you know, his feud with Nick Gage, for anyone following that, is I think his most anticipated match of the year as well. Yeah. So,
yeah, that is it. That has been a sight to behold for sure. I think you're on point. I think you're on point with that. And it'll be, you know, the other thing that, you know, to think about here is it's almost like I want to see, you know, and it can't be this year probably even at mm-hmm. this point, and maybe not even early next, but that Jon Moxley championship reign, while good, it took place in this pandemic era of wrestling where you had no fans for the majority of it. And I think Jon Moxley kind of deserves to get that run in front of fans, even if it's a short one. But I still think there's some legs there to be had too with Mox with that world title again. And I don't know that I'm advocating for, hey, he should have another match with Kenny Omega. I don't think that's the direction I'd go. But I still think he's somebody that you can keep hot enough to play in that scene when you might need him to, you know, year or so down the road. So yeah, it'll be an interesting story to follow. Before we open up the phone lines here, Tyler, one more thing, generally speaking, I want to bring up is it felt kind of like promo night on AEW Dynamite tonight. I mean, we had the Jon Moxley, Eddie Kingston vignette. We had the Acclaimed vignette, the promo segments between Miro and Archer, Inner Circles, Pinnacle back pre-recorded interview, Jade Cargill had something, and then the segment between Cassidy and Omega, and I'm probably forgetting one. So, I mean, did that work for you tonight? I mean, it's not – I don't want to call it a pivot from the way they usually program and book Dynamite, but it was heavy talking tonight.
Yeah, it was, and, you know, I think the metaverse reason for that is that, you know, next week's Dynamite is on Friday night at 10 or 10:30. I had to look it up because they were a little confusing on the description with the announce team. But obviously that show is going to get, you know, maybe a third of the normal viewership that late on a Friday night. So I think they kind of knew this is definitely the last chance they're going to get 900,000 pairs of eyes on the product, and, you know, wanted to get every big angle across and get each side their promo and stuff. So, you know, it didn't bother me a ton because it's which pay for how Dynamite is constructed, you know, in the weeds for me. I read the report every week, but so that was nice for me personally as a result. But it worked. I think if it happened all the time, it would be, you know, a little stale, like we see with Monday Night Raw specifically. There's a lot of talking, but so yeah, it worked, and I don't think it'll be the standard. So that was fine with me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it worked too. I think it could have been a disaster had you know, some of these segments not hit, but I think mm-hmm. most of them did. I mean, when you talk, and we'll talk about all this as we go through the show today, but, you know, the Mox Eddie stuff was fine. I thought the Acclaimed was fine. Inner Circle, obviously, was kind of next level and kind of set the bar, in my opinion, but Miro and Archer, you know, went right up to that bar. I thought that was a really good segment too. So we'll dig into all of that, but I agree that it worked. And, but yeah, I mean, if it's one of those things where it's like, you can do it, but man, if it's not effective and it's not good, then it will stand out in a big way. And I thought they, you know, walked that line nicely. But let's stop right there. We'll take a second here. We'll introduce the show, set the table before we start taking calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the May 19th, 2021 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later with a rundown and analysis of the show on his Wade Keller hotline. And you can check out all there is to check out with PW Torch VIP membership at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. We'll get more into the VIP perks a little bit later. The other voice you hear with me tonight is that of Tyler Sage from the PW Torch VIP podcast, Podcast of Honor. Tyler, great to talk to you again, and welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, always good to be here, and very excited to chat AEW as always.
Yeah, I was going through, you know, my notes preparing for the show today, and it's been a while for me in the co-host chair, so it's good to be back. But I was working with you last time, so it's good to pick up right where we left off, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to get the phone lines open, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Press 1 to let me know that you want in on the show today. And we'll make sure to get you. The callers are lining up right now, but there is some space. So make sure you press 1 if you want to talk with us. If you don't want to talk with us, you can drop us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to that a little bit later. But with that said, Tyler, if you're ready to rock here, man, let's go ahead and take the first call.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We'll start things off with a Skype call. Skype, if you hear the beep, that's you. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Hinton from London, Ontario, and congratulations, Zach, on the birth of your child.
I appreciate it, Hinton. Thank you for the kind words, and thanks for calling. What did you think of Dynamite, man?
I thought it was an average show today, although I did enjoy it. I'm not going to really remember much of it, but I do have a few notes here. So I want to begin with the build to the Britt Baker versus Hikaru Shida match, which I think that build seems to be a bit too Baker-sided. All of Baker's promos thus far have focused on her own advancement and not really directed at her opponent. And I can understand she's a heel being self-serving, but it's like you can be self-serving while still address your opponent's characteristic in some way, right? Like, in this particular case, I feel like you could just take any developmental town, put a belt on her, and Baker's promo would be equally as valid. Like, there is no rivalry between Baker and Shida, and it's just like Tony Khan saying, all right, thank you very much, Shida. You've got no character. You'll fade into obscurity after the pay-per-view, but thanks for holding forward after during the pandemic. And this kind of the same with her feud with Thunder Rosa, like very limited promo work, very little story. Mostly just like brief promos and very, very like running in after each other's matches, which, you know, ultimately culminated in an excellent match. I have no doubt this will be a good match, but no one really remembered why they were fighting in the first place, and I worry this feud's going down the same track.
Yeah, Hinton, that's a good point. It's a good point. I think, you know, there's something there to be sure. I think the Britt Baker side of this in AEW's defense here, I think the Britt Baker side has been really good. I think she has really come into her own, you know, in the last year with the heel character. I think she's found herself on the microphone. She has a confidence about her. But, you know, so that's all good. And I think, you know, you want that to happen, even with a heel. You want to see some momentum if that's the direction the division's going to go with her at the top. But Tyler, yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, Sheeta's kind of in the background here a little bit too much when you break it down the way Hinton did. You know, this feud could probably use another solid week of Dynamite, like a Wednesday Dynamite where they could have some sort of in-ring confrontation or a contract signing. I mean, I think for sure we're set to see some great piece of video work to get people pumped for this match. I'm sure that's on the horizon. But I, Tyler, I do think Hinton has a point here that Shida does kind of feel like in the background, even though she's the champion going on a year. They did announce she's got a segment next week on the show to kind of highlight 1 year as champion. But is that enough? I mean, are you with Hinton on this one, or are you kind of like, you know, it's the Britt Baker show and she needs all the attention?
Yeah, I agree 100% with Hinton, and you know, I think it's a very astute point. I thought this title match had the opportunity to be you know, maybe not the main event of a pay-per-view, but, you know, it had a chance to be right up there, you know, a top three match to build your card around. And, yeah, I mean, the what we saw tonight was very paint by numbers. It was, you know, just kind of told me that this match is going to kind of be in the middle, and I do think it's a shame. I mean, obviously Britt Baker has been one of the, you know, hottest stars in the company, along with, you know, Darby and Miro's recent rise here in the last, you know, couple months. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know if either of you, I'm not trying to put either of you on the spot, but I certainly cannot remember the last time Sheeta, you know, the last thing she did on TV. I think it involved Penelope Ford and maybe when all the other Japanese women were over in the last pay-per-view. But, I mean, the fact that I can't remember the last thing the champion did on TV shows that she's not being utilized at all, and they have no idea how to get her character over on TV. And so, you know, I think it's 100% on the booking and how they're using her character and their faith in her to, you know, to be a character. So, you know, I think it's you know, it's a missed opportunity for sure. But, you know, Baker, I think they'll go a different route and put her at a higher level. But, yeah, I think this is 98% Britt Baker is this feud right now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. Like, even if it is 98% Britt Baker, and that's where it looks like they're going that way for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still think, you know, you want to have Sheeta be a worthwhile opponent for her. And I think the more, you know, the mistake they're making is the more that you put Sheeta over, you know, the more it means for Britt Baker to beat her. So, you know, if you spend time, like, I think everybody knows the Britt Baker character. I think, you know, she's had that moment. I think everybody, fans alike are, you know, on the same page with, yep, like this makes sense, like to go to this match now. I mean, Baker's piping hot and she has been champion for a year, like that makes sense. But, you know, the story is in Sheeta's run, and can Britt Baker be the one that is Britt Baker going to be the one that wraps that run up? But if you leave part of that story completely off, you know, what's Britt Baker actually winning? Yes, the title, but I think she'd gain so much more notoriety even as a heel by making sure people understand just how impactful the Sheeta run is. So it's a great point. And the other thing, Tyler, that kind of comes into my head in terms of looking at this match in front of a packed house at Daly's Place is, you know, Britt Baker is a heel, right? And this character of hers and her ability to kind of connect her personality with her gimmick in the ring came together with the heel turn. But she's had some memorable moments. She had the match with Thunder Rosa that was universally praised and kind of launched her to the next level. I mean, I'm concerned that Baker is going to be out there wrestling as a heel, but she's going to, you know, have this first moment in front of a full house of fans that kind of want to show their appreciation for what she's done, you know, in the last year, that the reaction could totally pivot in the middle of that match. I mean, there's nothing, I can't go off of any type of crowd reaction at this point, you know, to kind of put an exclamation point on the point I'm trying to make. But I think that psychology is there and might be prevalent for this match. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if she doesn't get, you know, at least a 50-50 cheer boo when she comes out for her ring entrance. Obviously, Sheeta will get cheered, but I really think they're going to have to go above and beyond with the, you know, with Rebel at ringside. They're going to have to do a, you know, a ref distraction that everyone's going to, you know, roll their eyes at. They're going to have to really go over the top, I think, to keep her in the heel position firmly, because if they have a straight-up match and she wins, and there's not, like, layers and layers of contriveness, I think she's going to be cheered with the belt in her hand at the end. And, you know, if they want that, that's great. If not, you know, I think they will know if they have a straight match that that's what's going to happen. So I think they'll add a lot of layers of tomfoolery, if you will, to to make sure that it is known to the fans that she is a heel. And you know, I think Tony Khan will be banking on the fans to kind of play ball a little bit, because, you know, like with Roman Reigns, right? Everyone loves him as a heel, but he still got booed, because I think we all know that the social contract we have is to, like, kind of boo him to make sure we keep this nice thing going. So hopefully we'll get a little mix of that at the pay-per-view for anyone listening that's going to be there live.
So Britt Baker was originally brought in as a babyface, and that didn't work. And the heel turn kind of freshened her up and got her to this point. I mean, I'll throw it out there and you can bat it away. But I mean, is now the time to, with the crowd, you know, potentially with building momentum for her, like, is now the time to pivot her back to being a babyface at the top of that division? Or is it, no, the heel thing works, keep her there, that's the sweet spot?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just depends on the, you know, commitment they have for the rest of the women on the roster, right? So if she's a face, obviously, you know, Nyla Rose and Jade Cargill come up as her two big opponents to build for. And, you know, if I'm leaving anyone off, I apologize. But, you know, I think she can transition. I really think it could go either way, just as long as they commit to her character and have a plan for the next 6 months with her, I think it'll work. So, you know, I'm curious to see where they go, but I don't think it is make or break if they do or don't, I guess, is my answer, which is not a non-answer.
Fair enough, and shame on you for not knowing every single woman on the AEW women's roster at the drop of a hat, Tyler. Shame.
Yeah,
hey.
I try.
Hitting, back to you. Any comments on what the points we brought up, or maybe another topic altogether?
Yeah, I want to move on to the Miro promo. I thought it was good. I was actually worried. I didn't see the projected lineup today, and as the show was going on, I'm like, I was worried that they won't follow through with Miro's victory. They're like, oh, we've got so many people. We just got to get him in. All right, Miro won. All right, let's just move on. But no, I'm glad they followed up with him. I thought he cut a decent promo. When he came off really more likable than what's his name? Lance Archer, I think. So he said a lot of things that resonated with me. But like in particular, Jake Roberts just feels like a complete waste of space right now. I presume he was brought in for his mic skills. I wasn't born during Jake Roberts' prime, but I have heard that his talent is in those slow-paced promos that like command your attention, right? And he hasn't really done those in several months, I think ever since the feud with Cody. And he's not really good at trading these barbs or like calling people the Flintstones and things of that nature. And now that Lance Archer's a babyface, I don't really see a need for Jake Roberts anymore. That being said, Miro's probably going to end up the victor in this feud. And I'm liking what they're doing with Miro right now. And, you know, two big bulls going at it. And they did something to at least build up this match rather than just relying on the match itself to speak for itself, which AEW is known to do. What are your thoughts on this feud?
So, I thought the promo was really well done, you know, on a couple different levels. For one thing, you know, Miro was able to put a really good tone behind his win. I thought the aggression that he showed in the match last week carried over into this promo, and now it's kind of redefining the Miro character and the Miro act. And I think this is the Miro that can draw money. This is the Miro that I think people are going to want to see wrestle and either get beat up or beat up other people. I mean, this is becoming, it's not there yet, but it's becoming, you know, a money drawing act. And you layer on that the personality, not in a goofy comedy video game way, but just like the charisma that Miro has that is, you know, made him likable in terms of the fans' eyes, you mirror that on to the kind of aggressive approach in the ring and you've got something. So I thought he was really, really smart out there with how he presented himself. I thought he came off as intense. I also thought that he and Lance Archer both felt off the cuff, like what they were saying. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it just felt very authentic in terms of how they were going back and forth. Like you said, hitting two bulls going at it, and I thought the verbal jabs were the same way. So this, you know, I don't know how much heat this had before the segment, and this is not, you know, a top three match on the show, but I think, you know, the segment tonight did its job in hyping Miro up and hyping Archer up and hyping up the fact that they're going to collide head on pay-per-view. So that's the point of the promo. And I thought it checked all those boxes, protected both characters. And so I give it a definite thumbs up. Tyler, what about you?
Yeah. You know, I liked it as well. I was probably a little lower than you or Zach, but you know, I agree with everything you said about Miro. I definitely felt off the cuff. It very much felt like he went out there and he was able to say whatever he wanted to say. And the fact that he was able to, you know, keep the intensity of his character that he's been leaning into the last couple of weeks, I thought was a really good sign for, you know, him, his character, and just his long-term, you know, ability to, like you said, draw money, be a top, you know, top 10 guy within the company for a long time. So that was all positive. I also loved the, when they did the back and forth, I thought the camera work was really good. It was kind of unique. They shot up at Miro almost the whole time, I think, to make him look the same height as Archer, but, you know, just a smart trick, I thought, to not make him look shorter, which he's not tremendously shorter, but, you know, with Archer, I was not as high on, just in general. He, to me, feels, you know, again, to compare to WWE, he kind of feels like the Braun Strowman of AEW, where he's always, like, kind of there when you need a big guy to do something, and eventually he'll get a title run, but his felt just, like, a little less organic and just kind of like, hey, here's the thing I say. And not that it was bad. I just didn't, I don't know. His involvement in this didn't really excite me, but I thought Miro did a good job. And I agree 100% with Jake Roberts. He's a manager for a heel, and the Archer character going back and forth hasn't helped either of them. But I think realigning Roberts, you know, having him off TV for a little bit and aligning him with, you know, not an Anthony Ogogo, but someone like that who's kind of up and coming and intense would be great. And, yeah, I mean, he's kind of like the Arn Anderson for Cody right now, who doesn't really do much for Cody's character as it is either. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hinton, back to you.
I also want to bring up the Frankie Kazarian promo on the Elite tonight. So I thought he cut a good promo, but there are a couple of problems. First, I still don't know who the heck Frankie Kazarian is. I did not watch him in TNA. I wasn't really watching every minute of Dynamite in the first few weeks, so they were just this... You know, they were just a legacy tag team, but I don't know who they are, what their characters are, what their constitution is. They haven't really done much in the last year plus to really explain them to me. And now that Chris Daniels is supposedly gone, we have Kazarian challenging the entire Elite. I don't know how one member of a losing tag team is supposed to take on all the Elite, who he did mention by name. So where do you think this is going? Because it was passionate enough to me that it seems as though he's going to be involved feuding with some combination of them at least going forward on Dynamite. So who do you think they're going to pair Kazarian off with now, and where do you think this feud's going?
Yeah, this was an interesting one, and I had some problems with this too, and not the exact same ones that you did, though I think those are valid. And I liked the delivery. You know, I liked, you know, the promo. I thought it was, like, smooth. I thought he connected his points together. But the thing that I couldn't get over with the whole thing was, like, he talks about kind of hunting down the Elite, right, as if it was, like, their fault that Kazarian and Daniels aren't tag team partners anymore. And while that's true, they beat him in the match. Like, it was, like, that was – their stipulation. That was Kazarian and Dan. I mean, that was their deal, their story. Like, nobody forced them to have that. So to kind of, I thought connecting those dots was really hard to believe. Like, you can believe, okay, yeah, the Elite are bad guys, I'm going to hunt them down. But, like, I thought he tried to tie the fact that SCU is no longer a tag team because of the Elite, and really it was that team's own the own stipulation. So that storyline nugget didn't line up for me. As far as how he's going to do this, that's a great question. Tyler, take that and just comment on the entirety of the story too.
Yeah. So, you know, when he was doing this, I got the impression that Kazarian or someone that came up with this idea had recently watched Kill Bill, John Wick, or had read some Punisher comics, because that's kind of the vibe I got, with some combination of those three things, which sounds really cool on paper. But, you know, within the confines of wrestling, I don't know if you're just going to come in and screw them out of wins and screw them out of titles by interfering at the end. And, you know, I don't see him creating a faction. I don't think Kazarian being the leader of a faction would do anyone any good. So, yeah, like from a practicality standpoint, I don't know how they do it beyond him just being a spoiler for maybe the Good Brothers to you know, one time to give him credibility, and then kind of just being a thorn on an episode of Dynamite for somebody when you need to. But we'll see. It's an interesting take, but I think it's very hard to execute.
Yeah, I mean, because – and also, like, for Kazarian as this fighting – babyface, which mm-hmm. sounded good in that role, but it's like, mm-hmm. all right, is he, you know, I don't think that he's being positioned to take down Kenny Omega, right? I mean, that's just not the trajectory that he's on. So, like, while it's great to kind of spit fire and cut that, you know, fiery babyface promo like he did, it's like, I think if you're a fan of the show and you kind of know that, like, okay, you know, you're probably not going to get this accomplished, Kazarian. You're just probably not. So I think it's going to be a tough mission to get behind. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I think, you know, AEW gets the benefit of the doubt here, and we'll see what story they tell from this moment on. But I hope they can stay away from, hey, the Elite broke up my tag team, because it's just not quite how it went down, and that just kept beating me over the head as he was talking. Hinton, back to you. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I appreciate those points, and Kazarian just isn't the shining knight that's going to save us all. So I feel like this promo was needlessly exaggerated, but I mean, you got to get yourself over somehow, right? So I appreciate that effort. I wanted to then move on to Ethan Page, who is surprising me with his performances on the mic these last couple of weeks. So 2 weeks ago, he tapped into his history with Darby. He was honest about no one seeing their feud, but and then he tried to explain it a little bit. I kind of wish he explained it a bit more this week, just kind of explaining the history. And this week, again, he goes on this personal vendetta against Darby. And, you know, I think he's cutting a better promo than Scorpio Sky, who I don't understand what beef Scorpio Sky has with Sting, to be honest. Like, I watched you as a child, and now you're no longer the same. I don't – it's like, to me, he's kind of the same guy already. Are you saying he's
exactly
washed up
the
now?
Same.
And, like, yeah, like he's – I don't know what's changed about him, Doug. And I wasn't a WCW fan back then, but I've seen WCW in 97, and it's kind of the same Sting, except for, you know, he's a bit more cheerful now, I guess. And I also don't know why the Dark Order hates Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky so much. The psychology of this feud just seems a little wrong. It's two guys against, like, 12 others. I feel like there's some untold stories from AEW Dark slipping in. But anyway, your thoughts on Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky and where they're at right now?
Yeah, Tyler, just go ahead. Go first on this one.
Yeah, this I agree 100%. This is probably the worst-built pay-per-view match from a storytelling standpoint, just because it does feel kind of – it feels like, you know, they were just trying to give somebody to feed to Darby and Sting, and we kind of – built our way to this point in a couple of weeks. It just feels, you know, I mean, obviously every story is built that way, but it just, this one feels very in your face. Like, hey, we decided these guys are going to go against each other and that's about it. So, yeah, I don't know. And I feel like, you know, when Paige came in, it's not like he came in with a huge, you know, he was a secret entrant to the ladder match or a battle royal, something like that. I can't even remember, but, you know, it just feels like him and Sky are a level lower than I thought they would be. And they're, you know, them just sitting in the seats all the time. And I don't know. I just feel like their characters are not really defined. This is the first time I really felt something from Ethan Page. You know, and not that he's got a lot of opportunities. But, yeah, I just think it's two guys that I, as a viewer, a weekly viewer, I don't know why I'm supposed to care about what they're doing. And it just feels like two guys who just want to beat up some legends, or you know, one wants to beat up a legend, and the other guy wants to, you know, take on a guy who's high right now, and it just, I don't know, just it doesn't have any juice for me whatsoever. So, yeah, not a fan.
I think the problem with the, you know, look, Paige was fine in his promo tonight. I thought he showed some fire, and I thought he, you know, he's trying to get the match to a point where, okay, it's got some intrigue behind it, but I think it's hard for the match to escape what it is, which is, hey, okay, we want Sting in a tag team match, you know, so now what do we do? You know, and he's going to team with Darby, and that's fine, but now where do we go? And so instead of having the match as a result of the build and the result of the story, you have the match, and then you kind of come up with the build in order to get there. Because nothing about this feels natural to me. Like even Darby and Sting at this point, I think Darby Allin is has built himself a really great spot in AEW. And, you know, at this point, it's like, wow, Darby Allin on Double or Nothing, one of the four pay-per-view events, you know, isn't going to have, for the second time in a row, is not going to have, you know, a singles match. And I think that it's not that Sting is bringing him down. I don't want to say that, but I think his time is being, you know, monopolized by his association with Sting, where, you know, Darby Allin versus Ethan Page, like if they're going to go down that road, okay, I'm on board for that. I think you could tell a story there, but it's kind of like starting to feel to me, Tyler, that yes, Sting's around and Darby's attached to him, but I don't want to see this pay-per-view in pay-per-view out for the next year.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Cause until you said it, I didn't really think about it, but yeah, I mean, this should be the last pay-per-view that focuses on Darby Allin being in a tag team with Sting. He should be getting singles matches going forward because he's built himself to be that star. And if you're not going to, you don't want to say it, but I will say it. Like if they kept this trajectory for the next 6 months, I think Sting would definitely be bringing down the potential of Darby Allin. So that's a great point. If Darby was the TNT champion, which, you know, I'm not saying that he should still, because I think Miro's done a great job, but you know, if it was him and Cody for the TNT title or something, that would be a top three match without question. And now he's in this kind of weird tag team feud that is going to be totally fine, but it's more about the spectacle of seeing Sting in the ring in front of live fans for the first time in 6 years, as we heard 35 times tonight. So, it takes it away from Allin as well, because you're trying to establish these two guys who the audience don't really know or care about. And he's just, not that he's the fourth guy, but he's definitely the fourth person when it comes to their focus right now. So that's a shame as well.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I, for a while, like that first pay-per-view Revolution. Okay. You know, I think you can go there. And I think to be fair to Sting, I think, you know, having Darby associate with Sting, I thought has helped Darby Allin to this point, but you know, you got to break away, you know, and I think Darby Allin's now gotten to himself where he's hot on his own. I mean, and like, look, I think it's Darby Allin's story chasing Miro for that belt and building to, you know, a pay-per-view match or a big TV match. That's, you know, I think that can do big business, but he he's got to stand on his own at this point. And so, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's going to be fine. It's just, it kind of just exists so Sting can participate. And it's like, I just don't know that Darby Allin should be in, you know, participation trophy matches for Sting at this point.
Yeah.
Hinton, are we crazy? Where's your head at?
No, I think you have a good point. I have a friend whose husband was a childhood fanatic of Sting's, and I really hate to, you know, break his heart or people like his heart. But, you know, I was 3 years old when Sting was in his prime in 1997, right? And so, but I have gone back and I've watched that Sting, and there are some differences between that Sting and this Sting. That being said, what got that Sting over was he was alone. And what's not getting Darby Allin as over as I would like him to be over is he is not alone. He always has Sting and that baseball bat in his corner. The nostalgia, I'm sure Darby Allin was his fan, was a fan of his growing up. But now that nostalgia, you've rode that for a few months now. It needs to stop, because Darby Allin really benefits from being alone, from really not having anyone behind his back. That's where you get that, like, he's at 90% right now. If you want to get to that 100%, I think Sting's just gotta get to the wayside. Like, he's just gotta stop being with him now. He can't just keep running in on, you know, after his matches. Like last week when he lost the title, the camera didn't linger on Darby Allin. It was focused on Sting, who was battling people on the outside, and then Dark Order runs in and it's just this chaos, and then Lance Archer comes out to challenge Miro, and like there's no emotion, there is no agony of defeat with Darby Allin, and this is something that AEW is just missing out on.
Yep, well said. And like, you know, they got the job done, you know, put Darby with Sting, get him a little more over and get him a little more exposure. That worked. And so now you got to take that kind of what you did there and let it run on its own and do something else with Sting. So we'll see. Hinton, thanks. Any final words for us tonight?
No, I think I'll let you guys move on to some other callers now. Thank you very much for taking my call, and congrats, Zach, again on the birth of your kid.
I really appreciate that, Hinton. Thanks, thanks very much. And yeah, if you hear a thud, it's my head hitting the keyboard because of sleep deprivation. But thank you. It's been great. Everybody's happy and healthy over here, which is all you look for. So, but I appreciate it, Hinton. Thanks for the call and thanks for the kind words. Okay, we will continue on here. We'll go to 438. Let's go to 438 next. Please state your name and where you're calling from, 438.
Hey, guys. This is Alex from Montreal.
Hey, Alex. Great to hear from you. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was kind of a holding pattern show. It was solid. Nothing really, jumped out at me. Like, if I think about the show 3 weeks from now, I'm not sure what will stick with me. Probably the Miro Lance Archer promo, just because I'm really hyped to see what those two can do in the ring together, and the image of Moxley and Kingston running off with the Young Bucks shoes. So those two things are the things that I think will stick out for me from this episode. Nothing was really I didn't think anything was really bad per se, but there just wasn't anything that hit that 9 out of 10 level, and sometimes that's okay, that's fine. And I feel like this was just one of those episodes where it was like, that was good. I left, quite satisfied. It was like a good meal, but not like a filet mignon, at a fancy restaurant. It was just a satisfying diner-type meal. So, I guess there was a lot to talk about in this episode. I guess I can start from the beginning. So one of the things that really stood out to me in the beginning, because this is a taped show, was I felt the editor's fingerprints big time in the opening match. I felt like there were two cut-in voiceovers of Shivani promoting stuff, and I found it really distracting the way they, during Seidel and Christian, they pumped up Double or Nothing, they pumped up the casino game, the evening's match card, and I'm pretty sure there were two or three other things in there too. That just kind of, were shown on the screen, and I found it kind of took me out of it a little bit. I was just like, okay, guys, can we just focus on this match? Having said that, speaking of Christian, I feel like I've seen the Christian match three times now in AEW, and the Hobbs one is probably my favorite. I mean, he's got a formula he's working with. You start slow, you feel each other out, you work a body part, you build to some believable near falls, and then you finish with something that makes sense and that, was references something earlier in the match. And it's fine. It's good. It's a classic formula. It works. But for AEW in 2021, especially as the first match on the show, I feel it might be a bit too slow straight out of the gate. So that said, Christian is a master of the 2.99 kickout. I bit on two of the falls tonight. Between him and Miro last week, I feel like this is something that WWE guys are especially trained in, because I really buy it. But that said, I don't know if I want to start a Dynamite with a Christian match, because he's fine, he's good, he's even really good at times, but the pace I think isn't what I associate with Dynamite, especially as an opening match. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
And yeah, I'm glad this came up. I'm glad it did. Christian in general, and we can talk about it from a couple different angles here. But I mean, ultimately, I agree. I mean, Christian, he feels cold to me out there, and it's not because he's had bad matches. I think, Alex, you kind of hit it on the head. The matches are good. They're there, but I just don't get the sense that there's a lot of context behind them, or passion behind them, really on his end or on the audience side of things either. So they're kind of happening in this vacuum. And I think this, what he's trying to do in the ring from a style perspective in terms of the near falls and the drama and the selling the way he does and the stories he's trying to tell, I think for that to really work, you have to have an audience that's invested in you as a character. And I don't think he's gotten his character to that point. And so the matches kind of stall out, you know, between second and third gear because they don't have that investment to go to. There's nothing for the match to kind of live on it at that point in time. So, man, it's been a disappointing run for him. And I think expectations were lofty given how he was hyped to come in. I think everybody kind of, as that happened, had the reaction that you kind of just brought up, Alex, of yes, Christian's good, even really, really good. But is he this like top tier, tip top premier get for the company? Like, no, he's probably not that yet. He's trying to live in those shoes on the show week to week. So it's not working for me, Tyler. What say you?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if anyone told you that it was working famously, their name might be Christian Cage. So, you know, beyond that, I mean, of anyone in AEW, Christian feels the most out of place, and I can't even tell you why. It feels like every time I see one of his matches on Dynamite, it feels like there should be like a thing like, hey, here's a match from another promotion that we're showing you for the next 10 minutes. And it really has nothing to do with AEW. Besides the interactions with Taz, I mean, I just feel a huge disconnect with his character, with him really and anyone else in AEW. And, you know, his character's all off. I mean, I think the quickest change you can do is either, I mean, not that I want to promote the Kaz angle, but like him and Kaz teaming up against the Elite would make him feel more as a part of AEW, really just him teaming up with somebody that is established within AEW or, you know, a character change. Even tonight, I thought he wrestled very, very heelish against, you know, someone like Seidel, who is, you know, a babyface. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that he was, when they hugged, that he was going to turn on him and kind of create a new lane for himself. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he needs to change. I think he needs to be paired with somebody that feels AEW and go from there. But yeah, it's been, kind of stumbled out of the gate. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the heat with the match that like, you know, he's got the storyline going with Taz, but mm-hmm. you know, he's not going to have a match with Taz, you know, mm-hmm. you've got this story brewing there and I get, Taz has this faction or whatever, but it's not boiling over to the right places in that group, whether it's Brian Cage or, you know, Ricky Starks. I think that was probably, you know, in line to go to that match, Cage mm-hmm. versus Starks at some point, but unfortunately Starks was injured. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of reshuffling going on. I get that. But to me, I mean, you can't build a story for him unless you get this character thing figured out and get him a little more comfortable on that show. I just am seeing a guy who is trying to act like he has confidence, but doesn't really, you know, at the same time. And I think you can see that in his performances. And look, I think he's a talented guy. I think he can figure it out once he kind of, you know, gets into position and gets something that he can sink his teeth into. But right now he's kind of like a fish out of water. Alex.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you guys in that. To me, the best thing he has done, he had an exchange with Taz when he was in the ring and Taz was on the ramp. And I thought that exchange, that promo exchange was really strong. And it kind of like made me buy into his character and his mission and everything like that. But that was like, I don't even know, like a month ago. So if this is somebody that, you know, we want to buy into and you want us to care about, and especially if it's someone that, you know, you've already teased as a potential future challenger for Kenny Omega's title, we're going to need to see that like every 2 weeks or give him like even 30 seconds a week in the back with Marvez or something like that, just to let us know who this guy is, what he's thinking about, and, you know, where he's going. And yeah, maybe, you know, pairing him up with somebody could be a potential solution. And, you know, I do feel bad for him a little bit because definitely something got messed up with the Stark storyline, which seems like, you know, would have been the best match for him. But anyway, moving on from Christian, I really liked actually what they did with Anthony Ogogo tonight. I've been a fan of the way they presented him since he got into AEW. And that first match where, you know, he knocked that guy out with a liver shot I know it wasn't done like, you know, super cleanly and everything like that. And if Liz was on the show, we could go back and forth on that with how, you know, the opponent didn't really sell to the ref that he couldn't go on and it was just called off really quickly. But today, I was watching, and just as, you know, the match was starting, I was telling myself, there's no way that they can let Agogo wrestle a proper match. Like, the whole draw of him versus Cody and of it being on a show that AEW is asking people to pay money for is, can this guy wrestle an actual match? And that's the biggest draw for me. Not the, you know, the USA versus Great Britain or whatever angle they're trying to go for. It's, can Anthony Ogogo actually wrestle? So I was really happy that they had him do almost nothing today except, you know, take a couple of bumps and then just two gut shots. And the blood capsule was like just the right amount of carny wrestling stuff that I love sometimes. I know it's supposed to be like a serious angle, and I know that, like, you know, internal bleeding injuries are absolutely a very serious thing. But in the context of the pro wrestling world, like, I thought it was perfect to sell just how vicious this guy is. And it also shows that often Gunn can take more of his punches than Cody could. So that's he took two, but he could only take one. So anyway, what did you guys think of Ogogo tonight?
I thought he did a really nice job. I thought the word that comes to mind when I was watching him is he's got a presence out there, to be sure. I think he's got kind of the innate star quality about him. The punch thing, boy, that's, I'm not a huge fan of that because I don't know how far you can go with it. Like, you know, is he going to, you know, if he's a world title challenger someday, is he going to punch John Moxley one time and then that's going to be it? Like, it seems to me that it's a little too cute. And I think he needs to show more if he's going to fully realize the potential that I think he has with the charisma that he brings to the table. So it's not that I don't like it. I think he can, you know, lay a foundation of credibility with the punch and all that. But to your point, he's going to have to show something in this match at Double or Nothing. And I think Cody, you know, say what you want, but I think he's a good person for Ogogo to be in there with, because the match is going to be rooted in story, not so much big spots, big bumps, high flying. It's going to be rooted in story. And I think the match itself can do without, you know, the U.S. rah-rah country stuff. Just the two characters colliding head on, to me, that's enough, Tyler. I think Ogogo is going to be a good get and a long-term project for AEW to work on for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And, you know, I think there's something there, though.
Yeah. So for this episode, this is the thing I was most critical about this evening, just from a lot of the angles you guys have already talked about. So to back it up a little bit, I think the match at Double or Nothing is the biggest boom bust match probably that AEW has put on date, because for people that are very into wrestling, So I'll give that number two. Shaq's probably number one. You're right. But both Cody related. The innate thinking that we have as wrestling fans is that, they're hiding what Ogogo can do because they want to save it for the pay-per-view, and him and Cody are going to have a, you know, 4-star match. It's going to be great. It's going to put Ogogo over huge and all that. I hope that's what happens, because I do agree. I think Ogogo has a lot of star power, and I think the best thing of this feud was his promo that he cut on, I think it was AEW Dark, that, you know, you have to see on Twitter or watch Dark to see. And I don't think the TV stuff has done him justice as a character yet. So I think that's a disappointment, but so I'm hoping for the best, but if he doesn't, you know, if he can't really go, and all we're relying on is Cody taking punches to the gut, I think it could be an absolute disaster. I hope it's not. I hope Ogogo is great, and I hope him and Cody have a great match, because, I think he's got a lot of potential. But, and then the thing with the blood, I thought that was I didn't like that at all. I thought it was, it took me out of the match, because I kind of liked the story they were telling, and then that kind of went over the top for me. So I'm curious what they're going to do with him and Cody. Hopefully that was a test run and it didn't come across very well, and they won't do that. But yeah, we'll see. I'm just kind of dubious on the way this feud has gone on TV with Cody's promo, with the lack of Ogogo getting good promo time, and the rah-rah nature of it and all that stuff. I think there's a lot of fluff around this, and that's what concerns me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think those concerns are warranted. You know, I think you gotta Cody can harness that in good directions, but he could also, you know, go just too over the top, you know, and so he'll have to walk the fine line on this. I hope, you know, and it seemed like they did pull back a little bit tonight on some of the rah-rah. I know the flags were involved and whatnot, but, you know, you didn't get a promo of Cody doubling down on all the stuff from last week. So, you know, I think they got a face-off, a weigh-in is what they've got booked for next week's Dynamite on that strange little Friday show. So that'll be telling to see kind of what sort of tone is struck there. And I think we'll get a better sense of what the match will be. But I'm not expecting, like, you know, like a Matt classic here necessarily. To me, you know, if this goes that direction, even if, like, the Hook is seeing a Go-Go perform in the ring, I don't know that that's the best use of this match or where the story is at this point. To me, it's very much a story match with psychology and kind of what Cody does best. So, and if they stay in that lane, I think you know, it could be brought to a level that's serviceable and even good and successful. But yeah, it's got to live more than just one punch, and I think the rah-rah's got to be toned down. But I'm curious to see where it goes. I mean, this will really kind of – we'll be able to see just how effective Cody can be with what he does best in that ring after this is all said and done. Alex, your thoughts. Any thoughts on this or a different topic altogether is fine too.
Sure, I'll just finish up by saying, you know, I think eventually you have to do the angle where someone is wearing, like, some kind of armor plating or something, you know, underneath their gear to block Ogogo's punch, kind of like the Goldberg and Bret Hart spear angle.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if it's too early for that to do that at the weigh-in. Like, Cody's been wearing that jacket that he wore tonight, and that's a pretty, like, big, puffy-looking jacket. You could definitely hide something under there. It would also add some pounds to him, though. I guess in a way, and you have to kind of take off your shirt anyway. So, I don't know if I put it past Cody to already do something like that would, like, weaken Ogogo going into the match. It says, oh, Cody has a chance. He's taken away, you know, Ogogo's main weapon. I feel it's way too early in Ogogo's career for something like that. But I think eventually you're going to want to do that. Anyway, yeah, just, you know, do you guys think it's too early for that? And, that's basically all I got for tonight. So I wish you guys a good night and a good rest of the show.
Hey, thanks, Alex. Appreciate the call. Great topics. Thanks for making the call. Do you think it's too early for that kind of thing, Tyler?
Well, I don't know. I'm not the booker. I think for a big pay-per-view match, this might be Ogogo's biggest match that he's going to have for the next year. So just like with Darby Allin, you know, they used where they tied his hands behind his back for that big match on Dynamite against Jericho. And, you know, that kind of put him over. So, you know, I think I'm open to it. But the bigger thing is, you know, the gimmick of the punch, the fact that he's got a kryptonite that you can exploit that easily. And then, you know, if he can't do anything, you know, if he punches your middle plate and his hand's broken and he's useless, like, why would not every opponent use that against him? And then he's basically the worst wrestler in the company. I think that there's a lot of, like, logical pitfalls with his character being built around that punch when he can easily do something like that, and then it's established that he's pretty much beatable because of that. So I like the idea on paper and for a big moment, but it kind of destroys the logic of his character. So that would be my big concern on that.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, the punch thing, he's going to have to figure that out, because I think, you know, that works as, like, an intro, hey, here's this new character, and wow, that's devastating. That's pretty cool. But, like, you can't have main event matches when that's the only, when that's the thing that's gonna, you know, end your match, or that's all, that's like the best of what you bring to the table. Like, that's very, very one note. And mm-hmm. 2-1 note for what I've seen from him already in terms of just a star power perspective. I mean, I think he's got layers. I think he's got range. So, you know, it was cool to start, and I think it's cool, you know, when you are going to do a squash match with him to feature that. And I thought Gunn sold it well tonight, you know, for sure. But, you know, like you said, you can't have Cody out there selling the same way, because the bottom line is it's a punch. You know, Cody's eaten tons of punches in tons of matches and ends up just okay. And so I think, yeah, you got to layer on something a little bit more than just that for a go-go. And honestly, I think they do. I mean, I think they have to know that if he's going to be a main event player, that can't be all that he does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, back to the phones. We'll go to 781 next. 781, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, guys. This is Bryant in Boston.
Bryant, is Brian or Bryant?
Bryant, but you can call me either way. It doesn't matter.
Okay, well, we'll stick with your name, Bryant. Thanks for making the call. Appreciate it. What were your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
I thought tonight was a really good show overall. For the most part, AEW didn't get carried away with the afterbursts like they usually do, and it was refreshing to not see the Good Brothers for a change. I mean, I like the Good Brothers, but, you know, in moderation, you know, not like every freaking week. So it was kind of nice to not see them for a change. I'll kind of start off with there are only a couple of things I didn't like. I'll start off with that and then hit a couple of points that I did like. The first match, you guys were kind of talking about Christian a little bit. I fast-forwarded through that because I just didn't care, to be honest. Like, Christian, like Matt Sydal and Christian, it's like, I don't care. So, but I did like the part where Taz brought out the rest of his wrestlers, and it was a nice dynamic between Brian Cage and Adam Page. Hopefully I don't get mixed up with the last names and everything, but those two guys did pretty well, and Powerhouse Hobbs was mixed in there, and Ricky Starks cut a great promo. It's unfortunate that he has, you know, neck issues now. Hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later, but I thought that was a good start. I thought that was a good continuation of their feud, and really the only other minor things I didn't like was I really don't care for Jade Cargill at all. I mean, like, I fast-forwarded through that because, like, a lot of people, and I made this point kind of last week to Wade, that her face, I don't really get, like, the whole applying her look thing, because her body looks out of proportion, and I strongly suspect that she's on steroids of some kind. And, like, her face, clearly she's had work done. I mean, her face kind of reminds me of Billie Kay. It's not a good appealing look to me. So, I mean, she can't cut a promo, and so far wrestling's been not very good. So I think what they should do is, you know, put her into a training school or something. Goodness knows Big Swole needs to do that, because she botches almost every move she does. But I think they just kind of need to put her through some promo training and, like, you know, maybe some more time in the factory. I almost said Heart Dungeon, but go ahead.
No, I'm just gonna take the Jade Cargill thing, because I'm in a different place than you on her. I think it's not even her look. I think she's got a good look. I think she to me, outside of her look, it's her presence. I think she commands, like, attention. I think she, you know, when she's go ahead.
I do agree that she commands a presence, but I also think that there's a very, at least a 50-50 chance that she's on the gas, because her body looks out of proportion to me, and I think there's a very strong chance she might be on the gas.
Well, you know, we're not going to speculate about that here,
I will.
You know, because who knows? We don't know. It is all speculation. And really, I don't think that's a different issue altogether, you know, in my opinion. I mean, Is she? Is she not?
We don't know.
But
I just don't find her.
Hold on. The bottom line is, though, it's like, can she be a draw in the company, Tyler? And I look at her and go, yeah, she needs work. You know, I think she needs some work in the ring a little bit. I think she needs work on promos. I think she's still green in those areas, but she's got, to me, the element that you can't teach, which is that innate personality, you know, that personality that just, you know, when she walks into the arena, like, all eyes on her, you know, like, you can't always teach that, but you can teach the other things. And so I think they need to develop that. She's clearly a project for the company. But I certainly higher on her than Bryant. Where are you at with her, Tyler? And what did you think of the promo segment tonight?
Yeah, so for the segment tonight in the last couple of weeks, I think it's been kind of a poor story in general, and it's repeated, especially, yeah. You know, 3 weeks ago and 2 weeks ago, I think we're almost the exact same segment. It felt like it was almost, a copy there. Yeah. But, you know, bigger picture on her character, I think if they were presenting her as, let's say the way Britt Baker was presented when she first started as just like a total babyface that you're supposed to love, you know, I think we'd have a huge problem here. But I think her look...
Yeah.
And the way she presents herself, you know, and, the way her, you know, the whole fitness model vibe that you get with her in general is, it's a big heel character. And she obviously, for a lot of people brings out a lot of opinions. And I think that, there's a fine line, right? Could she be Baron Corbin to compare to WWE? Yeah, I mean, for some people, she could definitely get go-away heat, and that's where they got to be careful. But, you know, some of the best heels are walking that fine line 24/7. And, you know, I don't think anyone would say that her in-ring ability is great right now. But, you know, I think they are aware of that. That's why she hasn't had a ton of TV matches, and they just want to keep her, you know, on everyone's mind, that she's still around, that we still have ideas for her, and maybe she's training like crazy right now, and she'll have a big match down the road. But, you know, I think in general, they could do a better job in intermediate with this story because it kind of sucks. But I think overall, the character, I'm pretty bullish on her at the moment for being a big heel. And, you know, if you have someone like Britt Baker as a babyface, let's say, I think her getting a big win against Jade Cargill would help, you know, establish her as a dominant force in the women's division.
Yeah. And you know, The story I'm with you on, for sure. I mean, it's just it's so silly at this point, and I don't know. I don't even know what the end game is, and it's all, I don't know. It's all just unnecessary. Like, you know, I think her standing alone, that's her. That's her gimmick. You know, it's like her on her own. She's the one to watch. Like, I don't think she needs, you know, a manager. I think it's just a silly way to kind of, again, it's kind of like the Sting match in a way. It's like, all right, we need to get her on TV. What do we do to make that happen? All right, here's this weird storyline. I they got to do better by her in that regard. But the good thing, Bryant, is I think in a year from now, you can call back up on the show and we'll be able to have a debate on where she's at, you know, a year plus because I don't think she's going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, I'm willing to give her a chance if she can actually wrestle. I don't necessarily agree. I don't see her being a great draw, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I hope she can prove me wrong, but, you know, we'll see. But anyway, I'll kind of move away from that a little bit. The other negative thing, and then I'll get to the positive stuff, was that, man, Rick Knox is an idiot. Ugh. He is like the worst referee I have ever seen, and I've been watching wrestling since 2002. I've seen a lot of bad refereeing. That guy is terrible. Now, I don't know whether it's because they're making him look that way on purpose or if it's a level of incompetence on his part or maybe a bit of both, but one thing that I really get reminded of is the fact that Alex Reynolds got legit knocked out in a match against Private Party back several months ago, and it was pretty clear he was knocked out, and Knox didn't do anything at all to address that situation. And the fact that he just kind of fecklessly, you know, counts a little bit, you know, while the Young Bucks are, you know, basically taking liberty with the tag team rules. That guy, in my opinion, has no business being anywhere near a pro wrestling ring. I'd prefer it if he got fired or something, but I mean, Bryce Remsburg is great. Aubrey Edwards is great. I mean, really, the refs aren't that bad except for him, and he kind of gives the rest of them a black eye, and I really wish he'd just go away. But anyway, as far as the main event match went, it was pretty good, but I think Brandon Cutler was unnecessary. I mean, he and Michael Nakazawa, I mean, they really add nothing, to be honest. They're not great wrestlers, and I've seen Cutler wrestle. He's not very good. I mean, he does a fair share of botches, but I just think that the Young Bucks are good enough that they didn't really need to cheat too much in this match. I mean, the amount of cheating that they did was ridiculous, and I mean, maybe that would have been warranted against, like, Moxley and Kingston or something, but against the Varsity Blondes, it just makes them look weak, and I mean, if you want to cheat a little bit, that's fine, but I think the Young Bucks came off kind of negatively during parts of this match. But, you know, I mean, they wrestled a great match like they always do, you know, but I just don't think they need enough cheating. And I thought the afterbirth sort of with Moxley and Kingston was good, although I don't think the stealing the shoe part was really necessary. And I was kind of waiting for the Good Brothers to make a run in as the clock ticked down, and I was very pleasantly surprised that they never did. So anyway, that was my thoughts on the main event.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going for heat, I think, Tyler, but I didn't have a huge problem with it. I think, yeah, you're kind of walking a fine line of, yeah, you want to get heat, but you are the champions at the same time. And Varsity Blondes, while, you know, a viable tag team, not presented as tip top, you know, in the division. So yeah, I could see why you look at that and go, eh, does the Young Bucks really need to cheat this much to get that win? At the same time, you know, the bigger story is Bucks versus Moxley and Kingston. And I think you want to just keep the lines definitive in Young Bucks fully heel and Moxley and Kingston fully babyface. And I think they just used that cheating as a means to that end. But Tyler, what did you think? Too much?
No, I mean, I think in real life, I think both Young Bucks, you know, Matt and Nick are both very confident in their abilities in the ring. And if I had to guess, I think they want to really overdo it in a match like this where they don't really need to cheat. And they know that, just to make sure they really solidify that they will not get cheered any way, shape or form, because it's so important for their characters to be just booed by everybody. So that's kind of more the vibe I get. But, you know, it was kind of like when FTR first rolled in and they were having, you know, they were cheating tremendously, like an obscene amount, even more than the Young Bucks are right now with Tully. And it was against teams even less than the, you know, the Varsity Blondes. And that hurts me.
Point.
So I get where you're coming from, because you can kind of overdo it. So hopefully they notice that and go from there. I also, you know, on the within the storyline with Rick Knox, I mean, I would kind of almost love the Young Bucks to kind of call him out on a backstage promo, because it definitely, like, within the match, they basically focused to make him look like an idiot with the, you know, the switcheroo with the spray can, and then really just disregarding all his actions and everything. So I think they would help.
The Alex Reynolds thing didn't do him any favors.
Well, yeah. And that's, you know, definitely, you know, you want the rest in there for a reason, just like more in storyline with him. I think it would help to, like, not make him look like an actual bumbling idiot by making it seem like the heels are really trying to make him look like a bumbling idiot. And that would help, you know, his character long-term. Not that a ref needs a character. I'm not advocating for that. But I think that if you mix those two things, the Bucks could maybe do one or two of, you know, one of those in a match and not have it be overkill. So that's this, you know, kind of my overall thoughts. But yeah, the match was really good. And, you know, it was old school. You know, they got all the heat they needed. And, yeah, I think the shoe stuff with Kingston and Moxley was, like, you know, funny and their sort of style. But yeah, I mean, it was what it was.
Yeah. All right, Brian, any final points?
I thought Miro and Lance Archer had a pretty good back and forth. So that was a nice setting, and the Acclaimed and Moxley and Kingston was a really good match. But I'll end with this final point. As far as the two women's segments were, Britt Baker is great. I mean, she and Sheeta really put together a good segment with the heel heat and kind of the beat down after the match. So Sheeta did a really good job selling it, and Baker, you know, she put together the typical heel attack, and I'm really looking forward to their match at Double or Nothing. It should be something special. And it's, and I'll close on this last point. Serena Deeb is phenomenal. I mean, she came off, like, she started absolutely brutalizing Red Velvet, and it almost seemed like as if she was kind of teasing a heel turn later on. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but I thought those two put together a great match, and Deeb came out looking really well while putting over Velvet at the same time. I kind of expected Thunder Rosa to maybe come out, you know, to kind of tease a rematch for the NWA Women's title, but having Serena Deeb back is great, and I think with her and Red Velvet, and you know, I think the women's division with Deeb back is looking really bright. So I'll close on that, and hope you guys have a good night.
Appreciate it, Brian. Thanks very much for the call. Great great topics. Yeah, I really liked that match too, Tyler. I thought it was just, I thought it had a drama, hard hitting. I thought the submission at the end was you know, a good way to show that Red Velvet had some fight in her, you know, even in losing the match. I thought she had her opportunity to battle back, and one of her best matches on Dynamite to date. And yes, Serena Deeb, I mean, she's the common denominator for a lot of people's best matches on Dynamite. So, gosh, I don't know that she's going to be somebody that carries, you know, the division on her shoulders, but man, I mean, she can work, and she, in addition to making herself look good in there, her opponents, you know, leave her matches looking better than they did coming in. So I was very high on that match tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was the best match start to finish, you know, without a bunch of angles all around it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I thought this was a big moment for the, you know, young career of Red Velvet to you know, signal to us as audience members that, you know, down the line, there's really something there with her, because I thought this had the potential for Deeb to kind of, you know, get a win in 5 to 7 minutes and kind of dominate it and just look strong to reestablish her. And I mean, this was a, you know, legit fight that, there's a couple times, you know, with the belt on the line, I didn't really think Red Velvet was going to win, but I mean, she was much more competitive than I thought, and she, looked good in doing that. So, you know, I think that was great for her, and, you know, of her and Jade Cargill, she's the one getting more matches too. So that's a great sign for her that she's getting, you know, a lot of TV time. So I thought it was good. And also loved that there was no interaction after the match, because this episode felt very heavy on that. And most AEW episodes do too, where as soon as the bell rings, someone comes out and beats up the person that won or lost or advances an angle. And I do think AEW overdoes that. And it was just nice to have a match that started and ended without kind of anything after. It was like in its own world for a title belt, and it felt nice. It felt kind of old school in the best way possible.
Yeah, yeah, no, it did. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see where Red Velvet can go. I mean, I think she's somebody that not a pay-per-view challenger for Britt Baker probably, but you know, I think you could do Baker as a heel champion against Red Velvet at some point on television, you know. I mean, and I think that'd be a good match. I think she's getting herself to that level. I mean, you know, you look at the women's division a year ago to what it is right now, and I think that division has made a lot of progress. You know, you know obviously Sheeta kind of anchored things during the pandemic, but Britt Baker's come a long way. Ty Conti's come a long way. You've got Red Velvet in the wings, Jade Cargill, Chris Statlander's back. So I think they got something there now that wasn't there the last time Double or Nothing happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would say this time last year, most people were saying, you know, rightfully or wrongfully so, you know, the women had the 9:15 to 9:30 quarter hour spot, and it was usually, you know, a 5-minute match, and it didn't get much, you know, much fanfare. And, you know, people are calling for two matches a show at least, and to mix it up. And, you know, right now, I don't think anyone's having that conversation. You know, they feel like the division is, you know, on the right path. And I think, you know, in the long run, AEW was right to kind of hold off and not overexpose people, because once you get over those and you think that you can, it's really hard to get past that to a national audience. So, you know, I think in hindsight, they got a lot of flack, but I think they made the right call to kind of slow burn this division, and it's coming into its own right now.
Yep, it definitely is. All right, we'll finish up the caller portion with 305. 305, Javier, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, Zach, KCH, how's it going?
It's going good. Hopefully we left some, I think there's some topics out there for us to get to. What did you think of the show overall?
Yeah, overall I thought it was okay. By the way, congratulations, Zach. Wanted to get that in there before I forget.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate it very much. It's been a wild ride the last month. Appreciate it.
Good to talk to you again. I didn't know, so I was afraid I had broken you. So I'm glad it's something else. So, I'll just have to redouble my efforts in the future. So,
okay. Here we go. I'll strap in. Yep.
The Pinnacle, though we haven't mentioned Pinnacle and the stuff set up there. I liked the scene in the restaurant for the most part, but I think this Sean Spears really stood out in a negative way. I think they're supposed to be portraying him as the loose cannon of the group, but that entire his part of that came out like entirely way too cartoonish.
I am right there with you, man. I thought the exact same thing. I liked the segment, but he just seemed like they're just trying too hard, like just trying a little too hard with him. And yes, loose cannon is exactly what they're going for, but he was kind of like a caricature of that character in that moment to me. It was too over the top. I could respect where they're going and what they're going for, but they got to tone it back because I didn't go, wow, there's this dangerous guy in Sean Spears. I just roll your eyes at it. Tyler, what'd you think? Cause I'm right there with you, Javier.
Yeah. Lockstep. Especially for a wrestling character, like, he was doing that to the waiter because his drink was late. You know, I'd love to see that intensity when they were staring down Inner Circle a couple weeks ago, not to stand there and be, you know, a polite Canadian god. I think that'd be a better character for him to be like overly polite, kill you with kindness sort of thing. But this was over the top and otherwise pretty solid segment. I don't know. It's like what he did to stand out and everyone else had their characters defined in the right way, and it just feels, like a caricature. So, not great.
Yeah, and I think it's just it's a guy who's he's just trying to find his spot. I get that, but, you know, he pivots so often. He's kind of the calm, brooding heel, and now, like, what, a month and a half later, he's this loose cannon heel, and it's just – I think you got to pick a lane with him. He's got to take some time to breathe in the role that he's in. And I think he's in a good spot in a big time group with a, you know, big time player at the front of it in MJF. So just, just be that, be the background player. And then when it comes time to do more, but yeah, this was out of place to me. I'm with you, Javier.
And I'm also glad that they reiterated in a more strong way that this is not going to be the same thing as last year's, Stadium Stampede, that this is going to be more along the lines of blood and guts than, because they called this not going to be a Saturday Night Live sketch.
I think it's important too. Yeah, I do. Cause the Stadium Stampede, for one thing, it'll be interesting to see what road they go down in terms of how they actually do this. Like, is it the first match out there when, I don't know. You got the full crowd back for the first time. Do you really want to welcome everybody back and then go to something cinematic? Like, I don't know. At the same time, can you put it in the main event where, you want the people to be going home with something significant in their mind? So it'll be interesting to see how they play this, but I am glad that they told you, hey, this is not, funny, haha, Stadium Stampede, Matt Hardy changing characters in a pool. Like, this is real life and the real deal. And to me, it's an important differentiation to make right out of the gate so that, expectations are as such.
Yeah, I agree with both of you as well. And the placement, I think, is the most important, not important, but the most interesting thing to see where this is, because that tells you kind of how important that is, right? This main event's the show. Obviously, it's the most important thing going on. So, I tend to think it'll be probably like third to last or in the middle, just to break up the show a little bit. And I hope that it ends up in the ring. You know, they can start out in the stadium and then work their way through the, you know, through the kitchen, you know, do all those fun spots and whatever. But if it ends up in the middle of the ring, the crowd's going to be there. It's going to be more impactful if whatever the result is with the live crowd. So hopefully they can figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Javier, what did you think of the, we didn't talk about this yet, so we should hit it here while we're on the topic of Stadium Stampede, but the Inner Circle promo.
Yeah. Well, one thing I agree with you said is that, I'm 90% sure it's going to end up in the ring because there being a crowd there. So,
yeah,
but yeah,
they almost
have to. I was going to mention was the, I was going to go to the Jericho one next. I mean, overall it was fine. I just wasn't really a fan of Jericho doubling down on the fall spot, saying how, you know, it's the scariest moment of his entire career. And had I like missed, you know, he basically said, had I missed the area, I could have gotten killed for real, you know? And I'm like, so you just underlined the fact that it was like a fake fall, but it was still dangerous. So yeah, I was not, you know, I think it would have been smarter just to like move past it. Kind of like they did with the failed explosion, you know?
Yeah. No. Tyler, go ahead first.
Yeah, I'd say Jericho is very conscious about the blowback for that spot, and I think he's really trying to overdo it to make it seem like it was as dangerous as it was supposed to look. Anecdotally, I did get a text from a casual viewer that is kind of in and out on AEW, and they were like, "Oh, is Jericho hurt?" After, and they were listening to it live. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where like it works for, you know, a more casual audience, and then for a more hardcore audience, it's kind of like something you roll your eyes at. But in the end, you know, we're going to get a good match, so it's okay. But I think, you know, credibility is a hard thing to get back, and I think AEW's done a lot of things where they've not gone perfectly and then just kind of doubled down as opposed to just moving on. And so I think it's kind of a slightly problematic course that they're on with this. But, you know, whatever. It's to be expected with Jericho kind of trying to sell himself. So I was expecting it, not surprised when he was doubling down on it.
What drives me crazy about it is like, for this and the spot itself and the story of that spot and what have you, you can get to the exact same place in the story just by going a different direction. I think you can still tell, you know, the exact story Jericho was trying to tell in his promo with his family, and that he was beaten within an inch of his life and it changed him. You can go through all that by just talking about the blood and guts match. Cause I mean, that was intense in and of itself. And so, cause you're right. I mean, he did kind of undercut his own big spot by talking about how he almost missed, you know, that area that totally undercut that spot. And if you know what he's talking about, it's for sure undercut. And if you don't, you kind of say to yourself, what do you mean missed? I mean, he landed, you know, he got tossed off the cage. What did he miss? Oh, he missed the crash pad almost. So it's like, you just got to be careful with that. And I just think that the promo was good. I thought showed fire. I thought in the end, they answered the question, you know, of, are they going to do this and say yes collectively as a unit. And that worked, but just get there differently. Like just, you know, talk about the match, talk about blood and guts. I mean, that not only does it help sell the narrative that you're trying to walk through, but it puts over the match too as super dangerous, so that the next two teams that get in there, there's some stakes there. There's some equity there. So yeah, it's a mess. And I think Tyler, you're right. He's clearly self-conscious about it because he can't, you know, get out of his own way in terms of explaining it, whether it's on his podcast or even, you know, on this, what essentially was a go-home promo. Javier?
Yeah, my brother and I were discussing the whole thing the other day, and because we had read that part of the reason it looked so fake was that Jericho was not comfortable taking that bump, and some people were saying, hey, you know, you have a stage there, why not just go through the stage onto an airbag? So at least it looks better if you're going to do that spot. And if it was because Jericho, you know, didn't want to take that, we're talking then why not throw Sammy off the cage instead if he's willing to take that bump? Because if you do that, you could have Jericho be the one to quit, showing that he's, you know, that he values his people more than winning this grudge match. So, and something that the leader of Inner Circle would do, but, you know, MJF wouldn't. And at the same time, because he throws Sammy off the cage, and you have a forever enmity, you know, rivalry between Sammy Guevara and MJF, you know, for the future, once Jericho, you know, retires out of the picture, because, you know, those guys are going to be around forever, and you could always call back to that moment. So, you know, yeah, that was just something that an idea that we were tossing around.
Yeah. I mean, that would have worked. That would have worked. Anything else tonight, Javier?
As far as the Moxley and Kingston thing, I did love them taking the shoes. That was a nice particular commentary had gotten over the fact how much they're spending on the shoes, and they spend a lot of time on the shoes, and the fact that they walk out with the shoes, that was great storytelling. One of the times the commentary did not kneecap a story. But I do think there is a strong chance that they beat the Young Bucks, because if they lose, then you would think that Moxley goes straight back into feuding with Kenny Omega. And I mean, if you want to go back to them again, I think they'd want to wait around. So if you make them the champions, then they can have a program with the Good Brothers. If, you know, they could get the Good Brothers from Impact, they could have a program there while the Young Bucks can feud with Kazarian and whoever Kazarian brings in. So, you know, that keeps Moxley away from Kenny Omega while Kenny Omega does his stuff. Moxley does his stuff in the tag team division, and, you know, and then Omega could take out some other wrestlers, and either you go back to Moxley later, or you have someone like Hangman Page, which I think is going to be involved at some point with Omega again. You know, he'll be the one to, you know, you, at some point you get back to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that certainly is an avenue to do that. I mean, we'll see. I don't know what a pivot from the Young Bucks as champions looks like this early, kind of in their heel run. But yeah, the Kazarian story adds a nugget, to be sure, Tyler. I mean, which way would you rather see that go? I mean, I guess, I don't know. The Bucks as tag team champions to me is more important than Kazarian having a team that he can feud against, to me. So I think if it's me, I'm keeping the belts on the Young Bucks, but, you know, Moxley's a big star too. So, I mean, it certainly, the belts wouldn't get downgraded being around the waist of him and Kingston either, Tyler.
Yeah, I just think if you look at how each team is, you know, constructed, I think the Young Bucks need the belts more than Moxley and Kingston do. I think Moxley and Kingston could kind of, you know, they could get screwed by the Good Brothers in this match and then feud with them without the belt on the line, and I think it would be just as impactful because, you know, Moxley and Kingston are so good at getting stuff over at the moment, and the Bucks kind of need that, like they need to protect their gold sort of story to keep that going. So that would be my guiding light if I was booking it. And also I was thinking, as we were talking about Kazarian earlier, just to tangent a bit, I think if you had Darby Allin doing the exact same plot and promo that Kazarian did, I'd be 100% for that, of him being like a Lone Ranger, like hunting for the mm-hmm. the Elite. I think if we could forget Kaz said that and put that on Darby, I think that would be a perfect transition for him away from Sting. So if we could all just put that out there.
I put it out into the universe. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
I was actually going to bring that up with about Kazarian, because, you know, I dug that because it's kind of like an honor thing that even though he's going to be outnumbered and he called out all these people, including Kenny Omega, and, you know, we all know he stands no chance against Kenny Omega, but, you know, it's honor demands that he goes after that. Even if he's alone, you know, no matter, you know, against all impossible odds, I dug that idea. Yeah, Darby, you know, it's another story that would be like perfectly fit for Darby Allin. But, you know, this could define what Kazarian does next, because, you know, now that he's no longer part of SCU, he's basically going to need a new character. So if he becomes that kind of like, you know, the hero, you know, the hero that's fated to die because he's not able to defeat the forces aligned against them. You know, that seems, you know, at least it's something for him, you know, to do if you have plans for him. So,
yeah.
You know,
we'll see.
And you could have him challenge Omega, you know, on a TV episode. It's not going to be for, you know, a pay-per-view or even a big show. You just have him, you know, be one of the challengers or just like a one-off with Omega too. So, and then, you know, actually have a story there. So, I mean, you know, you don't need to have that. He doesn't need to be a threat because, I mean, over on SmackDown, it's not like Jay, Kevin Owens, or Daniel Bryan or Cesaro had a shot at Roman Reigns, but it was more the story that we're following than the, you know, chance that he's going to lose.
Right. Yep. Yeah. No, fair point. I mean, again, I think it's kind of rooted in something a little strange, but I'm willing to see it play out, to be sure. And he needs something now, too. And I think there's also going to be some sort of story about what Christopher Daniels said to him on camera, but that you couldn't hear. I wonder how that's going to factor in as well. Javier, thank you. Appreciate the call, as always. Any final words as we wrap up here?
Well, I did want to mention one thing on the Miro promo with Archer. I really liked it because I've always been an Archer fan since back when he was Dallas and Lance Hoyt in TNA. Mm-hmm. and I think he's a decent promo too, and I liked it. But I put myself in the mindset of the fans in the audience when Miro came out and he thanked Jesus, and I'm like, well, I can't boo him now. What do I do? Because I want to boo Miro. He just thanked Jesus. I mean, and you could kind of almost hear like the murmur in the crowd, like, do we boo? Do we? And it was like silent.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, not exactly a heel move, huh?
Depends who you're asking.
You know?
Just putting that out
there. True.
Well, and then the second time it was more like, and for my, you know, and for or the awesome, you know, body that you gave me, or whatever it was that he said. So that went back to being more heelish. But the first one was kind of like, how can you, you know, that's just, you know, yeah. So, that's it. So, want to, you know, again, congratulations, Zach, and talk to you guys later.
Absolutely, Javier. Great to talk to you. Appreciate the kind words and great points. And you're a busy man this weekend with all the pay-per-view primers. So hopefully you can take a deep breath and get ready for a couple of weeks.
I still have to finish Under Siege. I'm like halfway through it. So.
Oh, see, yeah, so, a little behind, but thanks for the call, man. As always.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Cool. All right, we'll gonna end the caller portion of the show right there. Thanks to all of our callers for who called and contributed great talking points, and we'll go ahead and move to the mailbag here right now.